are getting right now. So our college credits earned have been going up each of the last 4 years. The last year that you see on there, 16-17, is what we're projecting for this year. Again, a lot of that depends on will they pass those tests, pass those classes, but assuming they pass them, we should give out about 2,400 college credits this year, which would be the most we've ever given out. We're really happy with the number of our students here that are going off to college and getting huge college scholarships. Last year we had 128 graduates that brought in about $7 million worth of college scholarship offers. So again, we know that colleges are looking at our students as being well prepared. And this year we are projecting that 75% of our seniors are going to graduate with at least one college class under their belt. That's not including any of our students who are taking AP tests. Obviously, we don't know how they're going to score on those. But if you factor in our AP students, that brings us up to about 82%. I don't know how much you guys know about the new I-3 grant that we're a part of, but the I-3 grant has a goal to have 90% of graduating seniors within 5 years graduate with at least one college class under their belt. And we're starting off from a spot where we should have 75% this year. And that's it. Quick, right?
Mr. Bennett,
yes, ma'am.
Thank you for the presentation. A couple things. I was trying to follow your logic around your math scores.
Yes.
And can you explain that just a little bit?
Yeah, you know, and it actually stemmed from one of the things that you had talked to us about at our opening convocation. It really hit home with me when you talked about when we look at these test scores, what we really need to be thinking about is these are students who are not going to graduate, right? And we really looked at that and said, man, that we've got to figure out a way to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
But what we went back and found is that 83% of them actually are on pace to graduate. They've earned those points, right, mm-hmm. for math. And that's where the data shows that only 30% of the kids pass the test. Well, that was 30% of the kids who took the test. The vast mm-hmm. majority of the ESTEM kids have actually already got those points.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're looking at that, we're saying 83% of our kids are still on pace there to graduate and earn those points, which again is commensurate with where we usually have been at with our OGT scores.
Okay, but my thinking would be now you only have 40% of the kids that you have to grapple with.
Yep.
So that should make that goal a little more achievable because you're only working with a fraction of the kids as opposed to 100% of the kids, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Yep, and that's why we've got those goals up there of what we're trying to hit for them.
But did you say you had a target goal this year
mm-hmm.
for?
Yep. So our target goal this year is to get back up at least to the state average. So the state average was at 55%. So we're coming in. We started off at 30%. I believe it was 27 was the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So based off of those two scores, our goal is to get at least up to 55 to hit that state average.
But ESTEM can do better than that, don't you think?
I would hope so.
Okay.
Sure.
I'm just trying to follow your logic around setting a percentage at the state level when that really has not been the performance of that academy. So why would we set a bar lower for kids when we know we've been performing above?
Well, and again, if we're looking at the whole academy, we're well above that.
Okay. Let's go on to my next point around another data point, gap closing data. You didn't talk any about your gap closing data, which was a little surprising to me that ESTEM got an F in gap closing. Can you talk a little bit about some of the things you guys have talked about?
Yeah,
strategies?
I did address the gap closing in the executive summary that you guys
mm-hmm.
have in front of you, so that is all there as well. And what we found is that it wasn't necessarily a gap between our subgroups. It was a matter that none of our groups hit the marks,
mm-hmm.
right? So it wasn't a matter of do we need to work with our economically disadvantaged students or our African-American students. Our white students, every single subgroup fell below.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're looking at is we need to bring up scores across the board. This
mm-hmm.
isn't a matter of one subgroup or another that's not performing well. When you only have 30% of the students who pass the test, every subgroup is performing below par.
Right, right. So what are some strategies you guys have put in place to try to address meeting the needs of all kids?
Yeah, so, and again, when we're going into our data meetings right now, what we're taking a look at is the percentage of students there that are hitting the score on each of those different strands. And then we're grouping those students who are not hitting those performance marks on each of those strands into small groups.
Mm-hmm.
We're differentiating assessments with them and differentiating instruction with those groups to be able to bring them up. What we've seen so far, we've gotten through three strands so far in our math. We went from 46% proficient to 56% proficient to 70% proficient.
Mm-hmm.
So we're already starting to see some gains in those areas.
Okay. And my last point is around your government and history and biology scores
mm-hmm.
did not suffer as your math and your ELA ELA scores did. Can you talk a little bit why you think you got such great scores in those three areas and didn't do so well in the ELA and math?
You know, and again, looking across statewide data, you know, the American history and the government scores were high across the state. So I don't think that was necessarily just something that was from us. Again, our students performed very well on it. We're really happy about it. But I thought that was fairly high across the board. With the science ones, that was a little bit lower statewide. So we are very happy with where we performed at on that. And again, we're continuing to track those students this year to make sure that we score high again on that.
So you don't want to accept the gift of 90% of your students pass the history test?
I don't consider
it. It seems like you're downplaying that data.
I don't want to downplay that at all. I think that our teachers work exceptionally hard and do really great things. But I don't know that necessarily our social studies teachers were working a whole lot harder than our English teachers were. I think there's a difference in those tests, and I think that's evident when you look at the scores statewide.
So you think it's the cut score? So you just got lucky?
No, I don't think that we got lucky, but I do think there's a difference between those two tests. And I think that's played out when you look at the data across the state.
Okay. Well, I'm hoping that more than 55% of your kids pass.
Me too.
I just had one quick question. It's more of a clarification. I'm familiar with the point system, but this is not like the old OGT where it was you get a certain score and you pass and then that's the end of it. Now it's based on a point system where you have
sure.
to accumulate some things. So I just wanted to make sure in case there are people in the audience that are not as familiar with it, when you talk about passing and failing, it's not just as simple as what it used to be.
Well, and what we did with those math ones, when we look at the students who passed, we're still looking at the 3 or higher on that. So, yeah, we weren't talking about total points and getting the 4 in the math area.
Yeah, it's
we were still looking at students who got at least 3 or better. So, yeah, you're right. Some of that number would probably be even higher if you look at just who got at least 4 points at this point.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted, in case anybody didn't know about the point system.
Yeah.
Any other comments, questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is it better now, for me at least?
Testing.
Is it, how about now?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear me now.
All right. Now that the sound issue is taken care of, we'll move on to item 4.02, the Continuous Improvement Plan from HS Squared.
Good evening, members of the board, President Begany, and Superintendent Thomas Manning. I am Dawn McLeod, principal of HS Squared STEM Academy, and with us tonight is our assistant principal, Kevin Smith. As you have seen on our executive summary and CIP flowchart, we've had some really great positives and we've had some negatives this last year. And the focus for our academy this year will be on growth. The first way that we're going to show growth and help our students in our academy is through data analysis. Our teacher-based teams, TBTs, will be analyzing student data from Procore, STAR, MathSpace, and InGrade to determine immediate and future needs of our students. Short cycle assessments and exit ticket data will be analyzed, as well as benchmarking assessments to create relevant learning experience to close the achievement gap and stretch all of our students. We are going to do this through differentiation, rework for mastery, enrichment, and intervention. Some examples of differentiation, we use MathSpace, and students are assigned work based on either their strengths or their weaknesses. And once they master that concept, they will move on to the next. So we're differentiating for every single student in our math classes so that we, based on their needs, are filling in their gaps or enriching their experience in math. Rework for mastery, students are able to immediately utilize peer and staff feedback to adjust and complete assignments through the use of educational technology such as Google Classroom. So for example, in our English classes, we're using Google Classroom and Google Docs that students are writing their papers on there. Teachers and peers can go in and give immediate feedback, and then students can use that to rework and make their papers better. enrichment and intervention examples. Based on our student needs, students have the opportunity for enrichment and intervention through advisory. They can go and get tutoring during advisory. They can get help. They're being enriched through our TPBL lessons. And this year we are initiating quarter quells for enrichment and intervention. The next way that we will show growth and help our students grow is through curriculum alignment. Teachers are working to align course content with Ohio's new learning standards, and this will ensure a high level of rigor and relevance by analyzing test blueprints, implementing best practices, things like that. Prior to Ohio adopting the new Ohio Learning Standards, courses were aligned around the ACT quality core standards. ProCore, which is a program that we use, offers a testing framework that incorporates the new learning standards and models the high level of questioning used on the new state tests. Realigning the courses and utilizing ProCore will better prepare our students to be successful on the new state tests. Our staff is also continuing to develop TBBL, working with partners such as Mount Carmel to develop authentic problems for students to solve within their coursework. And most of our core content areas are working with instructional coaches to help implement TPBL with opportunities for differentiation and effective formative and summative assessments that guide instructional practices and that will help stretch our students.
So we are not just focusing on those two things, but one of the or two of our areas where we really felt like we made significant gains last year is with our students and with our staff. And the professional development we had for our staff, as well as the types of activities and engaging opportunities for our students. So we're going to further that this year by implementing a growth mindset with our students and staff. And so if you're not familiar with the growth mindset, it's that people believe their most basic abilities can be developed through dedication and hard work. In other words, you're not just stuck with what you're born with, but you can continue to grow and stretch yourself. So if you come into school and you're good at math, that's great, but we're not going to accept that as a final destination. We're going to continue to push. And if you come into school and you're not great at math, we're not going to accept that as a final destination or an excuse either, but we're going to continue to push and stretch throughout the year. It creates a love of learning, a resilience and persistence that is really important for our students and our business partners tell us is missing in their applicants. And so we're hoping that we'll continue to develop that. We're growing those students in many ways. We're using our TPBL, which Mrs. McLeod already alluded to, and we're enriching experiences by taking what they learn in class and applying it to the real world. We had some fantastic examples last year that we want to highlight. We had our whole school involved in a unit around genetically modified organisms. And so students were tasked with geographically identifying a region in the world, identifying deficiencies in their nutritional needs, and then designing very specific solutions and genetically modifying different crops that could then supply the needs of that community. And so students were then able to present that. And it was a very real-world problem-solving experience for them, and it was fantastic. In science and social studies last year, we had a collaboration where students were learning about American wars and wars that America had been involved in, but then they also learned about different health problems that were a result of those wars. For example, in World War I, the implementation of chlorine gas and the effects that that did on the lungs. So if you come through our building, and I encourage you to do that, we have murals on our walls with clay models of the lungs and the QR code that you can then look up and see the student presentation on the damage to the lungs as a result of the chlorine gas. And so as our world continues to evolve and we continue to be involved in foreign affairs, this is something that we want our students to continue to learn about and grow in, especially with a focus on the health sciences, as that is an emerging field with lots of opportunities for our students. This year, we are specifically focusing our TBBLs initially around the topic of bioethics. And so we're working with Mount Carmel to develop a bioethics unit for our students. And the goal there is that our students will actually present their case in front of a board there at Mount Carmel, and have Mount Carmel give them feedback on their research and evidence that they're presenting in their case. We're also using advisory seminars, and on Wednesdays, Mrs. McLeod, Mrs. Adams, who is our career counselor, and myself meet with students as a grade level to discuss various topics. We've met with seniors to discuss the college application process, the common application, things like that. We are also meeting with the juniors about how to choose a college and how to set goals for yourself and to achieve those goals. And so we're really focusing in on how to help students be college and career ready when they leave our doors. Finally, we're growing our students through interest-based clubs. We're giving students an opportunity to connect not just with an area that they're interested in, but other students as well as staff members in an area that they're interested in, and really developing that sense of school culture and school pride, because we know that if students are engaged in the school climate, that they're going to perform at a higher level. As far as our professional development for the staff, I've already alluded to the fact that we are exploring the growth mindset with our staff. We're really excited. On November 8th, we've designed a whole entire day meeting with Mount Carmel at their simulation center at Mount Carmel West. And so we are going to be going through and meeting with a bioethicist so that they can help us develop our bioethics TBPL for our students. But also we're going to be meeting with the people there that design real-world simulations for their nursing students as they come through the Mount Carmel College of Nursing. And so how are they building, how do they build simulations that are real world? What are the problems they're using? And then how can we incorporate those problems for our students as we develop those units for students there at HS Squared STEM Academy? One last thing. While we're there at Mount Carmel, I almost forgot. We're working with a physician who is doing emerging research with Fitbits. And so we want to bring him into our math classes so that students can help him gather data and analyze that data. And another example of how do we use technology today in the health science field.
And finally, we're growing in our community. So, you know, we have our community within our building that we're growing, but we're also showing our students that they need to reach out and be part of the bigger community. So this year we will have our second annual health fair on March 2nd. And I'm sorry, I didn't change the slide. Our first annual health fair went very, very well. And we're having our second one this year. We're having our second annual Pi Day 5K on March 11th. And we will also be displaying and presenting our wonderful work from the school year on May 9th at our art show and our bodies capstone presentations. So we are thrilled with the direction that we are moving in and feel that our growth this year will be amazing. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Smith and Mrs. McLeod, for the presentation. I do have a couple questions about data. First, I do want to applaud you. It really appears that HS Square is doing a phenomenal job branding themselves and really making themselves relevant and competitive, which is wonderful. Your enrollment is up. Lots of students who are choosing HS Square as a STEM option, and I think that's due to the leadership and the work that you guys are doing as a staff. So I'd like to just say that publicly.
Thank you.
You're doing some phenomenal things to help kids. I particularly like, I believe this is the second year that you have worked with the Mount Carmel staff and doing professional development with folks outside of the field of education and the field of medicine.
Yes.
Second year in a row that you're going to be sharing that space with them, going to them,
yes,
learning from people outside the field. That's wonderful. I think that's the right thing to do.
Thank you.
Can you talk to me a little bit about, I know you focused a whole lot on growth, and I think you and I have the same thinking around if you focus on growing every student, the achievement scores will take care of themselves.
Absolutely.
Is that your thinking?
It is my thinking. Yes,
okay.
We need to grow every student. Our data shows that.
Can you tell me what you attribute to your history scores as opposed to the other scores that you have in your building?
Absolutely. So our history started using Procore last year. So we were able to start getting kids in a different rigor of test questioning, and also getting them used to taking that assessment online. So our social studies department worked very hard on analyzing the data, looking at what they needed to test the kids on, and using that to guide what they were doing in the classroom. So social studies had a one up on everybody, and it clearly shows.
And Mrs. McLeod, do you by chance remember what your percentage was last year in history?
The previous year?
Mm-hmm.
Previous year. Oh, this year.
Year one.
Year one would have been OGT.
We'll talk about it, but I'd like to look into that a little bit, okay?
Yes, yes.
And your gap closing letter grade was an F2.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell me what kind of strategies you guys are imploring to try to address that.
So our gap closing, we had 100% on graduation rate, which that was a first to us. We were like, yay, 100% on graduation. But our reading and our math was down. So what we're doing is we're using STAR data for reading and math. That is also why we decided to purchase, because our math scores really took a hit, purchase Math Space so that we would have that constant differentiation in class. Our teachers use it on a daily basis with the students to fill in those gaps. So when we look at a STAR test score and it is down, we can look at those STAR scores based on each student and then assign the things that STAR is saying are the deficiency. Now, MathSpace also shows deficiency, but we're also looking at STAR and seeing if there's something that, you know, maybe we need to do a couple of times more and really get the mastery of that. So we're using our STAR data and MathSpace and math, and in English we're using the STAR data, and we're then working with those students in English class.
Okay. And how often does your teacher-based teams meet?
They meet right now on a monthly basis, formally. So they meet formally with their admin that's been assigned to them, but they meet more than that because they have to with the data collection. It takes some time.
Okay, thank you.
I had a couple of vocabulary questions.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see. So could you explain what short cycle assessments are and exit ticket data?
So exit tickets are, it's gauging to see what a student knows at the time that you're teaching. Good practice would be that you're doing exit tickets on a daily basis, right? Even if, and it doesn't have to be formal, even if it's a thumbs up or a thumbs down. You know, do you get this concept? Do you not get this concept? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Trying to gauge what students have learned for the day. So it could be a thumbs up, thumbs down. It could be two questions that they hand on their way out the door. So we call it an exit ticket because it's something that they do at the end of the lesson to gauge and see what it is that they know. So your short cycle assessments would be more of your quizzes, things like that. So exit tickets, again, best practices would be daily. We're asking for it to happen on a weekly basis. And short cycle is, you know, maybe at the end of the unit or, you know, at the end of the chapter or, you know, whatever. Yes.
Thank you. Okay. If they don't have other questions, I got one more.
Okay.
I was intrigued to hear Mr. Smith's description of the GMO transdisciplinary problem-based learning project.
Correct.
am I to understand that they actually did gene splicing?
Oh no, we didn't gene splice, but it was basically taking on their whatever area of the world that they were focusing on. They're looking at what the crops are in that area. So, you know, depending if the crop was corn, what could they do to the corn to genetically modify it to give it the, whether it's the vitamins or the minerals or whatever that group of people need that they're deficient on. So no, they weren't really genetically splicing anything. We don't have the capability for that quite yet.
I would have been amazed. So if they say, oh, vitamin, C or something is deficient in some crop, then were they reading like some science literature saying.
They may crossbreed or something like that. But if you'd like to buy us the equipment to genetically modify, okay. we'll take it.
We'll get some CRISPR equipment.
Right, we'll
all
take
right.
it.
Okay, cool. All right. Look for a partnership.
Thank you. Anything else? No?
Thank you.
All right. Okay, just making sure. Item 5.01, board members may speak on different topics at this time. Mr. Truex, do you have any comments this evening?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. President Begany. Thank you all for coming this evening. I had the opportunity last week to attend a seminar for the Columbus Women in Technology. I went as part of a cohort for the business that I work for, but I also went there with the intent on hopefully fostering some partnerships for the city of Reynoldsburg as well. If you don't know who they are, the CWIT, the Columbus Women in Technology Group, they're a large group of females in the IT industry, and I got to meet with about eight fabulous folks who talked about their trials and tribulations working in the IT industry, and I learned some interesting facts about the fall off of women in particular in the IT industry since 1984 and what they're attributed to, and I'm hoping that with all of our best efforts we can change those trends. They seem to be making a change, but if you get a chance, check them out at cwit.org, and they'll be having another conference at the end of the year if there's enough attendance. So I found it very eye-opening and enlightening, and I was only one of a few gentlemen there. So it was good. Check them out. That's it for me. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Trex. Mr. Whitman.
The Curriculum and Outcomes Committee met last week, and we were discussing, as we promised we would, what we're going to do about the academy situations for for next year and the years beyond that. We have some tentative steps for taking to accommodate everybody who with their first choice. We hope for next year and the remaining for the next few years after that. They're still being explored. We are meeting again on October 23rd at 3:30. So be sure and come and hear some of the discussion there. The minutes will be available soon, and I will post those on my Facebook feed. But one thing I did want to highlight is that a number of you have mentioned to me, well, why can't there just be a sort of undeclared academy option for students whose interests maybe cross some of the academy boundaries? And so I asked about that, and so basically the problem right now is that you have to declare a student in some academy because all the academies have their own separate identification numbers for the State Department of Education. And as a result, if a student doesn't choose an academy, Madam Superintendent, please correct me if I misrepresent anything here. But if a student doesn't choose an academy, well, then one will be chosen for them. And the problem right now is that, they'll get put in one by default, probably the one with the least, with the most room for them. And it seems to me that doesn't help with the different, perceived, statuses of the different academies. If the problem is that there's these four IRNs, as they call them, why not just go with a single IRN for the entirety of Reynoldsburg High School? And it's been brought up that this was the original plan when the academies were proposed. The difficulty right now with doing that is that in the meantime, these academies have differentiated themselves. So, for example, two out of the four academies are designated as STEM schools. If they were all housed under just one IRN, well, then you can't simply just call yourself a STEM school. You have to meet certain requirements. And so it's unclear how that would be managed with all the academies. Another proposal as well, okay, how about a fifth IRN for an undeclared option? That would be something that would have to be dealt with at, you know, at the state level. We had to make a case as it was for the four that we have. So I'm not saying that these are insurmountable things, and whether an undeclared option is a good idea or a bad idea, those are all things that we still need to discuss. But I did want to answer that question because several people had had it. And I guess thinking outside of, you know, one single IRN number or five IRNs, perhaps there's making a greater effort to ensure that whatever student, whatever academy a student chooses, that they can make it much easier for them to take courses outside their chosen academies. And maybe that would decrease the stress of trying to choose one academy or another. So those are longer-term steps. In the meantime, October 23rd is when we will next discuss the more immediate steps of just making sure that everybody next year and for a few years after that, while we figure out the long-term, can get into their academy of choice. Anything you'd care to add? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Whitman. Ms. Tenero?
I do not have anything. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Dunlap?
Again, I want to thank everyone for coming out tonight. I'm pleased to see a continued high level of participation and attendance at the meetings. It warms my heart. Thank you also to Don McLeod and Scott Bennett. Appreciate your updates tonight. There's strong leadership at both schools, and I think it really shows. Lots to be proud of. I know both of you addressed, and we talked about state scores. And the state report cards came out this week. I looked at, you know, not only ours, but many surrounding us. And most of the districts surrounding us received, if I kind of made that composite score, wasn't there yet, a B or a C. Ours was a C. Personally, I put only partial stock in the state test. Meeting the requirements is, to me, really like trying to hit a ever-moving target. It's not a full reflection of what our district is achieving or where actually our needs lie. And to put it in perspective, and this was the state from the state superintendent himself, as quoted from the Plain Dealer, there will likely be a lot of frustration expressed as a result of this release. It's difficult when schools are working hard and seeing improvement locally, but not yet seeing that growth reflected on the state report cards. Nevertheless, I am hopeful for our students, schools, and districts because I believe they have what it takes to succeed. I hope that communities will keep these results in perspective, that they will gauge the quality of their districts not only by what they see on the report cards, but by other information about what is happening in schools and with students. And I agree wholeheartedly that is from our state superintendent. And I hope that we keep that in mind as we move forward for the sake of our children and a quality, responsive education. Finally, at this time, I would like to propose a resolution. Mrs. Miller, should I go ahead and read that right now? Okay. This resolution, whereas the employment contract of Superintendent Tina Thomas Manning expires on July 31st, 2017, and whereas the Board of Education does not intend to reemploy Tina Thomas Manning following the expiration of her current contract of employment, now therefore be it resolved by the Board of Education of the Reynoldsburg City School District, Section 1, that the board hereby determines and declares its intent not to reemploy Tina Thomas Manning following the expiration of her current contract of employment. And Section 2, that the treasurer is directed to give written notice of this resolution to Tina Thomas Manning.
There is a motion on the floor. Do I have a second?
This is a second to discuss.
The second is to go with the motion, and then we would discuss.
Second.
Motion is by Ms. Dunlap, second is by Mr. Whitman. Do I have any discussion?
Actually, wouldn't, from board bylaws, wouldn't discussions of this nature be carried out in executive session?
If one would like to make a motion to put this into executive session, yes.
Well, then I move that this being a matter of employment, it be undertaken in executive session.
Before we would do that, I would be curious to know, I mean, the way, is this something that you were aware of that was coming, Neil? Or, I mean, you spoke the resolution as if the, as, because the board didn't plan to rehire or to renew her contract, as if it were a done deal among board members, where I've not heard a word of it.
Well, we can...
There's been
like
no
a
vote.
Second, we can go into discussion.
But has there been... evidently, there's been discussion. No one else seems shocked.
It's a motion on the floor.
I'm just asking a question in the interest of transparency.
Okay.
That's
understood.
Your word. Who's discussed it? I mean, am I the odd man out? The only one that had no clue?
Well, I'm making the resolution tonight as
I'm
many people have...
I'm asking that question.
If many people have already read in this week in
the
dispatch,
I guess the science
I have proposed
is answering it.
So there's a motion on the floor. So shall we have a motion, to Mr. Whitman, that you want to amend your motion to second to move to executive session?
All right, several items here. First, a point of order. I'm still gaining familiarity with Robert's Rules of Order, but I believe that direct questions of fellow board members are not how the best practices are in those in Robert's Rules. The motion on the floor is to discuss this resolution, and that hasn't. So first we need to devote whether to discuss it, and then there would be the motion to then do that discussion in executive session.
No, we would have to. You could withdraw your second and then propose a new motion to go to executive session with this item. And then we would have to, then you would have to have a second, and then we would vote. Am I correct, Ms. Miller?
Or the first and second motion can stand, but Mr. Whitman can motion to go into executive session to have the discussion, but we need a second to do that.
Prior to any vote?
Yes.
I will leave my motion as I stated. I move to have this discussion about the contract in executive session. Because that is my understanding of how these discussions are to happen by board law in the board bylaws.
Do I have a second to move this to discussion to executive session? In the interest of follow bylaws, I will second that motion to discuss in executive session. Madam Treasurer, would you call the roll, please?
Wait a minute. You stated a resolution. Neil seconded the resolution. Mm-hmm. Then Neil created a motion to take it to executive session, and you seconded the motion
to
go
to
executive session.
Prior to
what we're voting on right now is to go to executive session.
Correct.
And then after executive session, we vote on the resolution.
If there still is a vote at that time, yes.
Okay.
So call the roll for executive session.
Call the roll for executive session.
Okay, Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
I abstain.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Okay, motion carried. The resolution will be held in executive session after the regular board meeting. Item 5.02, I'm sorry. Did you have something?
I thought we were doing an executive session now.
At the end of the meeting, I would assume?
If that's how
Let's
Mr.
go ahead
Whitman's
and,
motion was.
Yeah, so move to
I'm sorry. I thought it was understood that they were at the end of the session, so that
okay.
was what I meant.
Okay.
I misunderstood.
Okay. All right. Item 5.02, resolution to invoice ODE for past charter school deductions from state funding. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Whitman. Do I have a second?
Second
by Ms. Dunlap. Any discussion? And I can start it off. This is more or less my idea and the process of it. As we all know, the Ohio Department of Education follows school funding rules for charter schools, and a number of districts throughout the state of Ohio, somewhere in between 80 and 90 or so, have decided to symbolically bill the Ohio Department of Education for funding that has been lost. This is not an issue about school choice or the ability for students to select whatever school that they want to go to. That's not in question here. What's in question is the way that they are funded. The idea behind it is that the amount of money that Reynoldsburg would receive from state aid for a student to come to our district would be approximately, I think it's $4,130. And then if that student decided to choose to go to a charter school, then the Reynoldsburg would actually be on the line for the remainder of that money to go to a charter school, which means that we are losing money as well as losing the student itself. And that's what I find concerning to the taxpayers. This is money that's not staying within our district. If it was a break-even point and we weren't held accountable for it, that would be one thing. So when you add up everything from roughly 2002 until current date, approximately, you're looking at a total of $4,713,234 of your taxpayer dollars that has not gone into this district. Now, we can talk about how it's divided up amongst the number of years and things of that nature. However, every little bit helps in a district like this. Imagine if we had $4 million spread out over the X amount of years. Field trips could be something that could be funded to go to Blacklit Park, or other upgrades in technology, or any number of different things that are coming out to there. So again, this is not an issue about school choice. As you know, we sponsor Everest as well as Patriot Prep and a number of other academies that do provide great services. The question in this is just the idea of the funding on the state level. Hopefully our legislators are starting to get the idea that this is something that is untenable to the to the taxpayers in our communities, and we have a responsibility as a board to make them aware of that situation. Whether or not they choose to do something or not remains to be seen. Those are my comments on this issue.
I'd like to thank Madam Treasurer, for the spreadsheet that she sent earlier explaining these numbers here. I also was glad to see that it wasn't just, the charter schools took this much, so therefore that's how much we want. She subtracted, for example, she added back in the estimated amount that we would have spent on teachers had those students actually been students in Reynoldsburg City Schools. And it was a rather conservative estimate, too. I think it was estimating one teacher for 50 students, correct me if I'm wrong?
Yes, that's what I based the calculation on.
Okay, yeah, so it was a rather conservative estimate there. One question that I did have is for our students who are, or no, for other district students who enroll in our school via open enrollment, mm-hmm. How much money do we get for those students who are coming to us, much as they might go to a charter school?
Last year was $5,900 per student. This year it's $6,000 per student.
So in other words, basically the full amount the same as our students who go to charter schools.
Our students who go to charter schools, where if you come in with an open enrollment student, it's $6,000. If you leave, if you're our student going to a charter school, your special ed category is taken into consideration, your poverty level, it's a little bit different calculation.
Okay. Well, I would just want to raise awareness that, fair is fair. If by some miracle school districts start getting this money back, then they might also expect to have to do some accounting with open enrollment students, which I think is reasonable, but something I hadn't thought about until it was brought to my attention.
I'm going to chime in and say that I grappled with this at first because I have said before that I don't believe all charters are bad. There are a number that have not, have actually, I guess I could probably even say abused the system, but that are not fair and have not served children throughout the state of Ohio especially. But there are some that serve students in a special capacity, and I always like to bring up Oakstone, which is one as a reporter I had gone and done a story on, and they serve the needs of autistic children, I feel, very well in that facility that they do have there. So it really came down to looking at the numbers and looking at the finances, and that's what it did it for me, that it is not fair. the money that we lose as a district. And Tammy, correct me if I'm wrong too, you know, there's a funding formula, and then so we have a certain amount of money that is, you know, is spent on each child. But it's a funding formula we get from the state, but it's so generous, there has to be a cap on that funding formula. And then depending on what type of district you live in, that there's a percentage on that cap, correct? But that does not hold true for charters. And so they're getting where, as districts, we are capped. The charters are not capped according to that funding formula. And it's the dollars that we are losing and that our children are losing and the opportunities associated with those lost dollars that convinced me that I definitely want to support this resolution.
Any other discussion?
I agree that the funding mechanism needs to be revised or reviewed, but this action would be a slap in the face to the five charters that we sponsor. It would be hypocritical of us in that we do sponsor five charters. As you said, all charters are not bad. I just heard a story today about a young girl who had a baby, was severely deficient in her credits, but was able to go to one of our charters and has her diploma now. There are kids that can't be in school. They have school phobia. They have emotional reasons. They're home taking care of parents or having to work because helping their parents to support the home. All these charters have their places. So again, while the funding may need to be revised, this whole idea here is, as you even said, pretty pointless. You mentioned that last month. It's a political stunt that's just taking up time and energy, our treasurer's time as well, and has no impact at all whatsoever on teaching and learning.
Aside from the fact that it might gather the attention of the state legislators in the process to hopefully convince them that certain things need to be changed. Again, this is not about school choice. This is that's a great story that you told. And it's not about the ability to deny someone the opportunity to go to a charter school that fits their needs. It's about the mechanisms for funding. So this wouldn't affect that in any way, shape, or form.
I would like to add that originally this measure, as I read it, had a lot in there about how the charter schools have made Ohio the laughingstock of the nation, and how they've extracted billions of dollars, and they have really poor educational outcomes. And the reason I moved to have all that taken out earlier is that to me, leaving that in there would have implied that if charter schools had been doing a really great job of educating kids, that we wouldn't have had this problem with the funding. Mm-hmm. But no, it's an issue of you're taking away from us more than you actually give us per student. And for that reason, I think you need to fund the charter schools directly. And this measure, while possibly pointless, at least adds to a growing chorus that this is an issue that needs to be paid attention to.
Any other discussion?
I've grappled pretty hard with this. I think that every student, every child deserves an education, and in some cases the charter schools are the right place for that student. I don't like the funding aspect of this, where we're losing roughly $1,000 per student per year. While that may not seem like a lot of money, if we have 50 students that go to charter schools out of Reynoldsburg, do the math. It's not rocket science. But at the same time, I think that it's our responsibility to make sure that whatever we can do, those kids that need an education get it, whether that's with us or at another location. My concern is, if you have a student that is a Reynoldsburg student and goes to a charter school for a week, and then leaves that charter school and goes to another public education facility outside of Reynoldsburg, let's say they go to Columbus, what's that money trail? Where does that go? Is it really prudent to think that the state is going to cut anybody a check for $4.7 million or even make a promissory note that says, oh, we're going to increase your funding by that? Probably not. So is it a slap in the face to the charter schools that we're supporting, that we sponsor? I don't know. I think the charter schools need to be held to the same standards that we're held to. So if they're going to get our funding, or whatever the funding system is that gets revised, and I agree it needs to be revised, then they need to meet the same standards that the kids that go to Reynoldsburg meet, or some deviant thereof. Otherwise, it's kind of like education run amok, which is fine. We want education to run amok, but we want it done so that the young lady in Elaine's story gets her high school education and is able to progress in life. So I don't know how I'm going to look at this.
I do know that Patriot Prep performed one grade. There was one place that it was can't remember now. We got the same grades, Reynoldsburg City Schools and Patriot Prep. We were one grade apart on one segment, and that's it. So we can't say they're not doing their job, any more than we could pick out every public school system and say every traditional public school system is performing here and all the chart. I mean, that's not fair. That's not fair.
And then I think what everybody is pointing out here, though, is really that it's not necessarily the schools themselves. We differ in opinions maybe with that, but it's the financing. And right. I think if no one's making noise, then their changes will not be made. And this is just a way. We won't see this money, but it is a way of making noise.
Right. Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
No.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion is passed. Item 6.01, Superintendent may speak on different topics at this time.
Thank you, President Begany, members of the board. As we've learned tonight, and the report card data did come out the past couple of weeks, and I was very anxiously awaiting our progress data for one, as we had early indications of what the other report card grades would be, and was really looking forward to getting our component grades for the first time. Historically, Reynoldsburg, I think I said this at opening convocation, has had an implementation dip when we transitioned to new assessments, and that was not something that we were not anticipating last year, and again with the changes in assessments this year. However, our report card doesn't reflect what our kids can do. And yes, it's only one measure, but it's an important measure. And it's, whether we like it or not, a reflection of our school district and a reflection of our community. And as such, we need to make sure that we do everything possible that we can do, and I know the practitioners and the principals are committed to this, to making sure that we perform well and our kids perform well, not for the letter grades, but because underneath those letter grades are kids, 7,300 of them, who need to compete for opportunities in colleges and careers, need to compete in a global workforce, in a global world. And so whatever we can do to make sure that our kids can do that, and that's what we need to do, and the report card will be what it is, but underneath those letter grades are kids. And if the kid doesn't have a certain ACT score, he will not enjoy the privilege of attending school at a certain college. We all know that. We cannot escape accountability, and this district has historically not been, we are not paralyzed by high expectations. We meet those expectations with tenacity. We roll up our sleeves and get it done, and that's what I've charged the principals and the staff with doing, and that's what we will continue to do on behalf of our kids. So report card 1A, 2 Cs, 2 Ds, and an F. We can do better. We will do better, and that's what our focus needs to be the rest of this school year. So with that, just going inside the buildings, looking at kids, working with teachers, working with the principals, really trying to get the focus back on teaching and learning, and working with our partners, trying to make our district a stronger, more productive, successful, positive place to attend school and to work. So, thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Thomas Manning. Item 7.01, I did not have any prior requests to speak before the board at this time. Were there any speaker slips, Madam Treasurer?
No, there were not.
All right, so moving on to item 8.01, 02, and 03 in finance. Madam Treasurer, if there are any updates or information you'd like to share?
In addition to the monthly financial reports, we have on what I believe to be our next to the last resolution to finally get our construction project closed out. We have from the Ohio Facilities Commission the Certificate of Project Completion. What this certificate says is that we've done a final audit and reconciled our accounting to the Commission's accounting, that the Commission does not have any further direct interest in our project, and that all outstanding issues are resolved. If the Board approves this resolution tonight, that'll go back to the Ohio School Facilities Commission. I imagine it'll take them a few months, but then they'll send back to us a final document. We'll be bringing a resolution to actually close out the construction funds. At that time, the board will have to make some decisions about where to move the money and what they want to spend that money on. We currently have $4.8 million left over from the construction project. Of that money, roughly $50,000 goes back to the state, and the rest is ours to keep and use for future capital needs. Also on tonight, I have a revision for the district's 403B plan. We offer a 403B plan to our staff. Roughly 180 staff take advantage of that. What this amendment does is allow them to invest in a Roth 403B. The current one, they put the money in on a pre-tax basis. When they take it out, it's taxed. Under the Roth, they'll put it in on an after-tax basis, but it will not be taxed when they take it out, and they'll be able to use it for college expenses. With our staff getting younger and younger, this is an option that may appeal to our staff. It doesn't cost the district anything to add it, and so I'm recommending that we move forward with that amendment also.
Can I ask a couple of questions? Just
sure.
With the construction closeout, so the OSFC audit, is that something that is done kind of a co-audit, or who does that audit?
We have to submit all of our financial data to the Ohio School Facilities Commission through our manager, our project manager, which was Smoot, which was assigned to us by the commission. They keep a whole set of records, and we keep our financial records. They keep a whole set of the building records and the building project. Those all have to be reconciled. When you spend money, it's categorized in different categories as to what counts and what doesn't count, what the state will pay for, what the state won't pay for. And that all has to be reconciled. We have to come to agreement. And then once we do, we sign off on that.
And that's how you come up with the $4.8 million that's left over, $50,000 of which will go back to the
yes.
state. Can I ask why that was left over?
When they did the original bond issue back in 2008, they asked for enough funds to complete, based on the estimate, additional things such as the athletic fields, parking lots, additional projects. When the construction project finally took place, it was during the downturn in the economy. Mm-hmm. Bidders were very anxious to get any kind of work, so things came in a lot under what was estimated.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because the timing of the economy just worked out in our favor.
Okay. And I suspected that's in some good investments.
Good investments, good project management.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And why the $50,000 back to the state?
Part of our money that part of the funding we got was state funding, and we earned interest
right.
on that funding, and so that part of the interest has to go back to the
okay.
state.
Gotcha. Okay, thanks.
All right, do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Dunlap. Do I have a second?
Second
by Mr. Truex. Any other discussion? Just used to it. Madam Treasurer, if you want to call the roll, please.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion's passed. Items 9.01, 2, 3, and 4, all up for action. Madam Superintendent, do you have any discussion points for this, for just kind of hiring and the usual?
President Begany, members of the board, I would like to take the opportunity to welcome our new HR generalist, Eric Ulis. He's in the audience. Give him a wave. He has been with us a full week, and he came back the second week. So welcome, Eric. We're happy to have you. Things in the HR office have been very productive and smooth, and we're just happy to have Eric on board. So thank you. I don't see any other items I want to comment on.
Can I ask a question?
No.
Ms. Thomas Manning, could you just expound, I think we all maybe know up here, but it just expound on the history of the HR specialist position, or generalist, I'm sorry. Just kind of how that came about, and this is not a replacement for the director, but this was an addition.
President Begney, members of the board, back in, I believe it was February or March, I approached the board officers with a concern about needing some additional support in the HR department and perhaps going a different way in the HR department. I tossed out some possibilities, and hiring of a generalist, creating a generalist role or two, was one of those two options. I believe I received board approval in June to hire this position, and we went out seeking the best candidate and found Eric, and we're happy with him.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments?
I had a question about item within 9.02, and specifically item 9. So that would be what page is this on here? Well, okay. Somewhere in here, it seems like I saw names that I recognized from the minutes of last month's meeting. So approving employment for several names that is any of this like copied and pasted and carried over from the last month's meeting minutes?
President Begney, members of the board, we don't hire people twice usually, and we certainly don't pay them twice. So I'm thinking maybe this, I can tell you the people that are on the agenda haven't been hired previously. There, with the exception of one or two, we have employees that sometimes we hire in the summer that find another role in another district that we have to, once the board approves them, we have to put them on the board agenda to accept their resignation, even though they never worked in our district. But as far as employing people twice, they may switch positions within the district. We may increase their time in the day, which creates a change. They may be on 1 month for a percentage of time, and then the next month for an additional percentage of time to make them full-time. Lots of quirky things like that, but hiring people twice, no.
Okay, thank you.
I did have one, I forgot after going through the agenda, I did have one additional question. What was the, now I've lost it again, this is so long, the previous rate for the safety substitutes? What's the term am I looking for? I flipped through in here, I found this, and I lost it again. The safety specialists. I know we are approving a safety specialist substitute rate for $15 per hour. What was that previously?
There was not a rate established previously. Mm. That's why we added it. When we established sub-rates, it's been several years ago, that was not on the list. That's a sub position we don't usually need to fill, but someone was potentially could be off on a long-term absence. They ended up not happening, but since we have a rate established, we needed to get one board approved.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, did we call a motion? It's been a while.
No, we need a first and a second.
Okay, first, do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Whitman. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Truex. Any other discussion? Seeing none, moving fast. Madam Treasurer, go ahead and call the roll on this.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion's passed. Now up to some travel items, 10.01, 2, 3, and 4, all up for discussion. I don't know if we have guests who are going to be coming up and speaking, but we'll start off with Hannah Ashton, Wagner Road Jr., and Baldwin Road to Washington, D.C. Come on down.
Good evening. I'm Amy Case. I am the D.C. coordinator for Wagner Road Junior High.
Sandy Gentile, DC coordinator for Walden Road Junior High.
And Melissa Ray, the DC coordinator for Hannah Ashton.
We are hoping to travel May 10th through the 13th of this coming school year. The cost for the trip this year is $620. That is up $20 from last year. We use Scholastica Tours, and they have increased their cost by $20, which is why we increased ours. I did some research as of this morning with other districts around us. Pickerington is getting back to us soon. Licking Heights is more than ours. They're about $740. Gahanna is close to $1,000 because they fly, and so that's one difference between their trip and ours. Whitehall was the only one that I found that was under ours. It was $585, so by about $40. We also travel to Gettysburg on the way home from D.C. Whitehall does not, and that's why our trip is a little bit more expensive.
Very exciting.
So we'll take any questions that you have.
I assume you have all the insurance and all the procedural type things together.
Yeah.
My son wanted to know if there's any way that you can stop me from being a chaperone.
Yes.
Okay, just make
the
eye. Thank you.
I know the first year I asked to be a chaperone,
Joe,
and I was very disappointed.
My son asked the same thing because he's an eighth grader.
What fundraising are you doing this year to help supplement?
I think we're all doing the same thing. We have two different fundraisers. One is called Tri-C. It's a brochure that has various items in it. The other is a coupon book. It's called Kids Stuff. For both of them, they earn 40% profit directly off their trip.
And so two fundraisers.
Correct.
To help for this trip.
Yeah, okay. And I have had students earn almost the entire trip before.
Yeah.
So it's very possible.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks. And now we have HS Squared to New York's, oh wait a second, did I skip one? Encore Seniors to New York City, 10.02.
Good evening, members of the board and Superintendent Tina Thomas Manning. My name is Alyssa Gettner, and I teach at Encore Academy. I'm an English teacher. And for a while, I've been talking around with some teachers to see if we can get something established for seniors to work towards for a senior trip. And so this is the first year that we're really trying to push for that. The trip that we are aspiring to put on the list for these students is one that is specifically designed for students interested in performing arts. It is a more expensive trip. The price tag is around $1,900 per student. However, it is a fully inclusive trip. It's fully insured. It occurs after graduation, so we would miss no class time. It's all the funding would be handled by the tour company, which is convenient for us since this is not something that I have personally done yet or anybody in recent years has taken on. So that's reassuring. They also have full security guards on watch the entire time while we're in the hotels, and every minute of the trip has been booked fully. So this is something that not only pertains to performing arts for Encore's purposes, but it also will pertain to English curriculum as well, because we will be going into Harlem and different parts of New York City, so we'll be able to look at different types of literature, and also obviously talking about history, going to the 9/11 site, those sorts of things. More than anything, I'm hoping that this will be an incentive for our seniors. It will be something that they can work towards. There will be expectations that you will not be able to go on this trip if you are suspended or expelled or exorbitantly absent from class or failing classes. So this should hopefully be something that incentivizes and changes some school culture. We haven't talked too much with the students about this because we didn't want to preemptively move forward without board approval. But from a brief survey, students are very willing to put money towards this from their own jobs, since all the students who would be going on this trip would be seniors and they would be graduated. So that's something they have said that would be possible for them. But we've also looked into some potential fundraisers, which we are going to have to do a lot of. And based upon the participation in Penny Wars over the past 2 weeks, from what I've seen from our students, there's nothing to stop these kids from raising money when they really want to win something. So I'm not concerned about that aspect of the trip either.
And same thing, all the procedural insurance and forms and all that will be taken care of?
Right. I believe the liability insurance was sent through, and the company has full coverage for insurance, okay. So every kid would be protected under that.
And yours was a bus trip, right?
It's actually flight.
No, this one. I thought I read one that was a flight. Okay.
Yeah, this Yours one's is. A flight, yes. Mm-hmm. So it's from June 1st to June 5th, mm-hmm. and so 5 full days, and it would be flight.
It sounds wonderful.
It should be amazing. It should be perfect for Encore.
You're going to try to get tickets to Hamilton?
That was my first question.
That would be a good score.
Anybody who knows me knows I'm crazy about Hamilton, and so that was my first question. We will get to see 2 Broadway shows, and they will get to participate in backstage improv classes with actual Broadway actors, which was one of the selling points for me for our students to get to have the opportunity.
Great.
That's pretty cool.
Very cool.
Cool. Any other questions? Thank you. And now 10.03, Educational Travel, HS Squared to New York City.
So this travel has previously been approved by the board, but we had a change of date because of AP testing. Mm. So this is just back on. Because of the change of date, the fee did go up $30 because we had to change the day, and then the buses were not available to come out of Cincinnati. They have to come out of Cleveland now. So we're just on for reapproval. Just to refresh your memory, this is a trip that we're starting with HS Squared, and then we're growing a little bit at a time to the other academies as a senior trip. But for management's sake, we're doing it in manageable chunks to make sure that we're rolling this out, so that we have the proper things in place. Just like the DC trip, you know, we don't want 500 kids the very first trip, and it's our first time to New York City. So that's it. Any questions?
No. Now, I had it listed as discussion. Is this something that we're moving to or having action with tonight? Seeing as how it's already been pre-approved, or it's just the change of date?
You can if you want to, yes.
Okay. We can do it next month when we, if we fulfill everybody, so we don't have to do too many motions. All right. Thank you very much. Item 10.04, Ohio YMCA Youth and Government Program.
And I think we have 2 representatives here. Oh, 3.
Or 3.
No, 3.
Do I hear 4?
I guess I'm going to be up talking. Jamie is nursing a little bit of a voice. I told her it was convenient because it worked all day long until we came here, so we'll see. I am the Youth and Government Advisor at Hannah Ashton Middle School. We started this group last fall, and it's an opportunity for some of our kids who were selected to serve in a role where they get to simulate the government process, writing a bill, analyzing bills, sharing their bills on the floor at the State House. So we didn't get up and running enough in the fall to actually, last fall, to attend the first middle school conference. It's already a high school conference. But we stayed together as a group, and we started looking at bills, writing bills, and we did a lot of leadership things within the building. So we did some fundraising. We bought some items for need for children at Nationwide Children's Hospital. So we kept together as a unit, and we met routinely throughout the year. So this year we're our leg up because we've already got a lot of our bills already written, which I haven't told Charlie. And now we're looking to actually go full swing and roll it out. So I wanted to introduce Charlie Myers to you. He works through the YMCA. He was my initial contact last summer when we started to consider this. And then he helped us get organized last fall, and he's just been following us and supporting us with the process. So he's definitely, our group did go watch the process one day last year, but he definitely has a lot more knowledge of the inner workings of the backside of it. So I thought maybe letting him speak a little bit, and that would help maybe answer some questions.
Thank you. So if there's any questions, I'll be glad to take them. But as you said, this is our second year with the Ohio YMCA Youth and Government Middle School Conference. We've been operating a high school conference for the past 66 years. I live in Reynoldsburg, so it's very nice that I can instantly just connect right up to get someone started in the middle school program. We have had high school students from Reynoldsburg participate the past 3 or 4 years also, so with our high school program. Any questions?
And I'm glad, Charlie Myers, you were here tonight because we got to honor a number of your students last spring, but I know that you couldn't be here, and so I welcome you, and I'm glad that you're here. This is an amazing program. I did get to go down to the State House and see some of our high schoolers and talk to them. How does this, the middle school program feed into and support the high school program?
The middle school program will feed into in the sense that the students already have a knowledge of the program. Our high school program is only is 66 years old, but it's in a rebuilding process. So a lot of our students have no clue about it when they get to the high school. So by having some middle schools involved already, that'll instantly help feed into our high school program. Right now, it's a selective group. A lot of our groups, once they get into the high school groups, it's whoever's interested in the program joins youth in government. This year, we're expecting about 700 students at our high school conference and about 250 at our middle school.
Wow.
From throughout the state.
Mm-hmm. If I recall correctly, there was some kind of confusion last year over who could participate, who could go to maybe the youth in government thing. So I take it I'm hoping to avoid that this year, and I take it that, you know, having this up for discussion tonight is one step toward just making sure that everybody understands as early as possible what this program's about and what it intends to do.
Right? Yes, that's what purpose for the middle school and the high school. We've kind of worked out between both campuses that both campuses will have participants in this year's conference.
And is this after school or during school? After school, okay.
Currently, the group meets. A lot of the kids are also involved in other clubs on Tuesday, so right now we've been meeting on a Monday, and then they get parent transportation home, that particular group of kids. So we meet after school to organize and plan and do all of those things.
Okay.
But the actual government program, the students will miss 1.5 days of school? Is that?
They will. The conference begins actually on a Sunday, mm-hmm. and then they'll be there all day Monday with their bills, legislating, presenting, analyzing, voting, those kind of things. And then there'll be a half day finish off on Tuesday, kind of a wrap-up session. And the kids also have opportunities to run for positions of leadership with even in the youth conference. So, you know, kids from Hanashin have the opportunity to serve in a broader leadership role should they choose to after, you know, they experience it.
Wow, I'm not hearing much difference between the middle school and the high school level. Yeah. I mean, it sounds pretty intense.
The only difference between the middle school and high school is high school, we also do a lobbyist program, a judicial program, and press, and all that. So we basically do all of government. Middle school right now is strictly legislative only.
Okay.
So it gets them out of the dirty word of the lobbyist. So.
It's probably a good thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will leave some brochures here for you.
Please.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right, we'll take action on those at next month's meeting. Item 11.01, teacher and counselor evaluations. These are a couple of memorandums of understanding. Superintendent Thomas Manning, do you want to briefly sum up what
sure.
these are all about?
President Begney, members of the board. Just two MOUs with the Teachers Association and the administration. The counselor's evaluation is a new evaluation. Both of these MOUs were approved by the bargaining members, and the counselor's evaluation basically is an agreement to use a different rubric, one that we believe might be more doable for our counselors and our administrators. And the MOU is around just the vendor assessments that we use for student growth measures and talks about the safe harbor mechanism again for this school year.
Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Tenero, second by Mr. Whitman. Any other discussion or questions? Seeing none, Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mrs. Tenero?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion's passed. Items 12.01, 2, and 3 are all up for action. Mr. Starr, you have the floor.
I want for your approval of the annual Meta Solutions agreement that basically supports our student information system, our library system, and EMIS. You will see that the amounts did go up. The EMIS coordination agreement's also only for 6 months. We will be transitioning that back internally. Item 12.02 is a correction of the payment in lieu amount. The floor of that did go up. We approved this back in the July. This is to correct that amount. It increased by basically $5.34. So this is to bring it up to the new floor. Item 12.03 are basically surplus items. They were old textbooks from Livingston High School that we'll be either selling them to a reseller, donating them, or trashing the ones that are damaged and
the other item would be IT surplus. These would be items that are beyond repair and are obsolete.
Thank you. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Truex. Do I have a second?
Can I? Is there a discussion?
We can have it after a second, or we can have it now.
Yep.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Whitman. Is there any discussion?
Okay, I'm sorry. I jumped the gun. I just was looking at the long, long list of computers and various electronic items. I know there were monitors and everything separated out. Where do those all go? Because I don't know if some things can be recycled or reused or donated to other districts.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of different electronic waste recycling options. You know, there's some through the Solid Waste Authority, different vendors. Some of the items, as Rob will know, you have to pay to get rid of if they're the CRTs, those types of things cost.
What's a CRT?
Cathode ray tube. It's the old school monitor.
Oh, okay. All right.
So some of the older TVs we have, we'd also have to pay to get rid of. And so a lot of times we look to find a vendor who basically will give us some dollars for the LCD monitors, those type of things. So we'll get some sort of, $5 per, et cetera, for those. But in lieu, they also take, in addition to that, they will also take the items that we would typically have to pay to get rid of. And so typically we'll look at, some different companies, whoever will give us the best price, as well as kind of one-stop shop to take everything. That's who we would typically go with. And so okay. We have a vendor that we use through the electronic waste. We are in the process of participating with the Solid Waste Authority through a solid waste bid, as well as an recycling IT type of thing, which will hopefully lock in some better price on that as well.
Okay, so it's all recycling. None of this could be donated at all, right? Where it would be too difficult, maybe too many man hours even to sort through.
The question would be is how do you want to go about, because at the end of the day, do we want to pick and choose? Do we want to go through it? What do we do with the stuff that we can't get rid of? How do you coordinate? There are options to look around this, but a lot of times because of the amount of labor, the effort, and everything else, this is something where the vendor shows up, they basically show up with a whole army of individuals, they take everything, and we really have very little involvement with that. Mm-hmm. Things we can look at, I'm not sure.
I thought there were programs
out there. If these things are worth even those types of things. We're doing everything we can to get, the longest life we can out of the equipment. I would say at this point they've been thoroughly used and probably aren't really of any value.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion passed. Item 13.01, move to executive session. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Dunlap. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Truex. Madam Treasurer, any discussion? No. Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. The motion is passed. We'll be moving to executive session. We are returning from executive session at 9:32. Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mrs. Dunlap?
Here.
Mrs. Tornero?
Here.
Mr. Truex?
Here.
Mr. Whitman?
Here.
Mr. Begany?
Here. Back in executive session, I would like to make a motion to approve the resolution for Dr. Alleg. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Truex. Any discussion? Seeing none, Madam Treasurer?
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
I just like to say that we wouldn't, or this board wouldn't be in this situation had they followed our own board policy, considering recommendations from our superintendent, letting our superintendent do her job managing her own staff. Had this board followed the policy, we wouldn't be having this vote tonight. They're not abiding by board policy.
Thank you. Any other discussion or commentary? Seeing none, Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mr. Begany?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
No.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Motion has passed. Return to the motion that was brought up about the non-renewal of the superintendent. We will now be, do we have to go for a second or go through the process again?
No, you have a motion by Mrs. Dunlap, a second by Mr. Whitman.
Madam Treasurer, or I'm sorry, is there any other discussion?
I have discussion. Again, as I said earlier, if the Board of Education was interested in engaging me in a conversation about non-renewing my contract, the professional and courteous and sensitive way you do that with an employee who's worked for 15 years in your district is to have a quiet conversation about that, not a public conversation. So I would like to be on record saying that I'm disappointed, unfortunately, but not surprised by the behavior of the board.
Response to that, the superintendent was informed of this in a private discussion last Thursday. If there's no other discussion, Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
No.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion is passed. Do I have a meeting to adjourn? Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Whitman?
Second.
Seconded by Ms. Dunlap. Any discussion? Seeing none, Madam Treasurer, please call the
roll. Vote on the termination recommendation.
No, we did. That's just. It wasn't a termination, it was just notice of non-renewal to inform you.
No, the other issue.
Okay. I didn't, yeah, that's the one that I don't have. Motion to, no, wait, is which one? I'm trying to.
That's the motion of the
The January.
Oh, I'd like to make a motion for the termination of Mr. Adkins based on the recommendations of the superintendent.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Whitman. Any discussion? Seeing none, Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Nay.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion passed. Now, do I have a motion for adjournment?
Yes, you have a first and a second for adjournment.
Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion passed. Meeting adjourned.